tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, everyone. Another tennis.com podcast, Monday, September 24th. I'm Ed McGrogan talking with Steve Tigner. Steve and I will be here on Mondays, kind of either rehashing the weekend slash going into the week ahead, usually a combination of both. And I think this is another example of that here. Steve, you just wrote a piece for the site, actually, talking really about the fall season. This is kind of the first time you and I have talked about this part of the year. You had a line in the piece that I enjoyed. I'm just going to quote it here. You say, we may have to watch and appreciate Joel Friedsong and Caroline Wozniacki as they continue their winning ways, while at the same time avoiding all speculation about their slam breakthrough potential in 2013. And you're referring to some, you know, titles by both of those two last week, and really kind of what we take out of these fall events. So, you know, in your opinion, what really is the overall meaning for these tournaments? Because I think a lot of people share a lot of different opinions about that.
Yeah, I think the reason it's hard to say is it doesn't really lead to anything. Doesn't lead to a Grand Slam, so you don't really look at it as here's somebody's form going into a Grand Slam. It's just sort of here's somebody's form at the end of the year. There's no connection to a really, you know, a really important tournament. And for these two players, Tsonga and Wozniacki, they've had good falls in the past. Wozniacki in 2010 won a couple fall tournaments and pushed herself to number one, where Tsonga last year won two tournaments, made two big finals, including the World Tour finals, and then bombed out pretty early at the Australian Open. So, you know, there was a lot of talk about him going into the new year because of what he'd done in the fall, and that just didn't turn out to be – it just, you know, it didn't pan out, and it has never panned out for Wozniacki either. So you just have to take these – you know, it's almost you enjoy or appreciate these wins for the – you know, on their own, but they don't – unlike, say, the clay court circuit, they don't really give you an idea of what a player can do at, you know, at a Grand Slam. It's also this time of year, some of the Grand Slam winners like Djokovic, Federer, Murray, obviously Nadal, they tend to downshift a little, take a little time off, and then, you know, work back up at the end, you know, at the end of the year for the World Tour final. But it's definitely a period for other people that may not be factors in the Grand Slam to do some damage.
Yeah, I think it may uncover sort of that second tier, really, kind of seeing the cream of the crop from the guys, you know, on the ATP, maybe just below these big four here. And I think kind of looking at some of the draws this week, you know, we're not going to kind of go into big bracket breakdowns here. In fact, you'll have a piece tomorrow about specifically the Tokyo tournament and, you know, maybe some of the men's events here. But you do see guys entered in, for example, Thailand here, Bangkok. You have Tipsarevic, top seed, Raonic, number three seed here. You have Ferrer in Kuala Lumpur over there. So it's those guys that I think about. I think actually specifically about a guy like Raonic, you know, where he's not going to run into a Federer, a Djokovic, a Murray. And, you know, for a guy like that who really still hasn't proven or we really haven't seen him in too many of the really late round dramatic rounds because the top four have been so strong. You know, the fall season, and especially for a guy like him who might do very well indoors, that could actually be kind of a telling thing, but I think, like you say, to a degree.
I think, you know, you look at somebody like Tipsarevic last year, he won a few tournaments at the end of the year in the fall, and that helped him with his ranking and then also helped him get better seedings at the U.S. Open. It's not a, you know, it's not a dramatic thing. He didn't end up making the semis of any Grand Slam, but he did reach the quarters at the U.S. Open. He's because his ranking was up and his seeding was better. He was able to avoid the top players early in tournaments. So in that sense, it could be important for somebody like Raonic if he wants to do that. You can boost your ranking, then boost your seeding by playing well now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right about that. Switching to like kind of the women's side here. Now this is compared to these two tournaments we just mentioned. What you have here in Tokyo is really actually one of, honestly, the better draws of the whole year for the women's side. You get a couple back-to-backs, Tokyo and China, the following week, and you see basically a stacked draw. It's missing Serena Williams. I do have to say that's kind of the elephant in the room for looking at this Tokyo draw, but it is pretty stacked with everyone, though. Kind of without really going into the round by round, the quarter by quarter, you know, what do you kind of make of an event like this where, you know, so soon from the U.S. Open, we see kind of everybody kind of getting back together and, you know, aside from Serena, of course, which that's quite important since she's dominated the tour since really Wimbledon here.
I guess the last 2 years, you know, you had Wozniacki and then Radwanska last year used this part of the year to boost their rankings. Wozniacki went all the way to number one. Radwanska almost went to number one last year. And Radwanska also used this as a boost for her confidence. She eventually made the final of Wimbledon and had a good, you know, had a good first half of 2012. So I think it's an opportunity for somebody like that. That's been the historic that seems to be the last 2 years, the trend. Maybe you'd see somebody like Angelique Kerber continue to do well. Maybe she could do something like that this fall. But also, you know, the top players, Azarenka and Sharapova, they'll want to position themselves for the next year. They're both here. So I guess it doesn't, you know, it goes back to the WTA with when Serena's not around. It's sort of here we're playing maybe for second best, or you're positioning yourself in the rankings and the seedings, but it's not going to tell you necessarily that, you know, who the next Grand Slam winner is. And then, you know, this Tokyo is a really good draw beside other than Serena not being there.
I think to kind of close things about this is, you know, we saw last weekend another player who's not in this draw, who was more of the talk last weekend, is Laura Robson here. Not entered in this Tokyo draw, but last weekend reaching a final in China. And maybe this goes a little more along what you're saying about what you can discover from some players who really for the first time are kind of given the stage really to you know, to kind of showcase what they've done. Robson, of course, at the U.S. Open was really a standout first week story. And you wrote a little bit about Robson today and some of the talk that's been kind of generated about her since that and this past week here. I think you kind of cover the scope of what the outside perception of Robson is from Chris Evert, some of the British writers. You know, what are your thoughts on Robson kind of overall after seeing her a little bit more these past few weeks?
You know, it's still positive. I think her play in China was a high level, not as high as it was at the U.S. Open. It seems clear. You know, it seems to me now that the U.S. Open, she didn't feel a lot of pressure playing against Clijsters or Li Na, the top, you know, really top ranked players. And she played about as well as she can. She was a little, not quite at that level in China, but she was still playing the right type of game, playing an aggressive game. And I was impressed by her attitude, very level headed, didn't get too high or too low. She made a really good comeback in the final, but then she also had a lead that she blew in the third set, but it's just, you know, it's hard. It's a little hard to tell with her. She has the hitting ability of the top players, but she wouldn't say she's as fast as some of the best players. So it's, you know, she is a question mark. She's only 18 though. And this is a great result. I think it's a solid result that shows that she, you know, she's going to be getting better from week to week, not just winning a big match and then going away. Like that's an important, I think it was an important tournament in that sense for her.
Yeah, and we really have kind of heard about Robson, especially if you're really following the tours for, it seems, quite a few years by now. And, you know, to kind of make that push at this point, you know, it's certainly something that I think is worth the attention that she's receiving there. So, you know, when she comes back here in the fall, I think you'll be seeing her in quite a few of these other events here until the year comes down. You know, that's kind of, I think, one of the stories that we're kind of uncovering here. So, like I said, Steve will have Tokyo Breakdown tomorrow. That will be televised on Tennis Channel. Kind of some sporadic hours, certainly late night hours, and then the other tournaments on tape delays if you want to catch those. So look for that tomorrow. Steve and I will be back on the podcast next Monday. And that's all for today. Tennis.com, thanks for listening.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.